wants me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
So where are we going today on Abandoned Manitoba? Our guide, as always, is Gordon Goldsboro from the Manitoba Historical Society. He takes us to the abandoned and obscure places of Manitoba, and he's here again. Hello.
Good morning, Terry.
So your hint last week, I was really intrigued by this. So a pair of buildings related to the strongest man in the world.
Well, allegedly the strongest man in the world.
Okay.
But not just, as I said, temporary buildings. In fact, in some sense, they weren't temporary at all, because now, many years later, over 40 years later, they're still standing. So they weren't really temporary in that sense.
Okay, so where is this?
Okay, we're talking about an area just south of Riding Mountain National Park. The nearest larger towns, I suppose, would be Oakburn or Rossburn, an area settled predominantly by Ukrainians at the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century.
Okay, and I don't know which to ask about first, the buildings or the strongman.
Well, let's start with the buildings. I want to first say that these buildings have an interesting name. They're called Buddhas. And of course, we don't mean Buddha in the same sense as the East Indian mystic who was the basis for Buddhism. A Buddha is a Ukrainian word that means temporary shelter. And the idea was that when these settlers came here to Canada, before they were able to find their land, they had to have some place to put their family. And so they would build some kind of temporary structure that they called a Buddha. And if you look at around the province, many of the groups of people that came here would have these temporary structures. If you go, for example, to the Mennonite village in Steinbach, they have an example of something called a semlin. It was actually also called a soddy by other groups. And basically the idea was that it's cut pieces of turf.
Of course, I've seen those.
Sure. Yeah. And that was how they would live.
Is that what a Buddha was, though?
Well, Buddha didn't look quite the same as a soddy or a semlin, but it was the same sort of sense. It was a temporary structure. What it looked like essentially was that they would take poles, basically small tree trunks, and tie them together at one end and put them upright, and maybe sort of like an upside down letter V. And then they put several of these side by side to create sort of a tent shaped structure. Then they would put horizontal poles across those uprights.
Yes.
And then cover it in either sod, or they would use sort of, well, you could call it sort of rough hay, phragmites or giant reeds and anything they could cover it with. On each end of the building, they would cover it with some more upright logs, and then cover that with a mixture of mud and straw. The only entrance and exit was a single little door that was just made out of a few pieces of wood on one end. There was no windows, so it must have been rather dark inside there. And that was it. That was the nature of a Buddha.
Wow. And so you found, what, how many of these?
Well, I'm told that at that site where I found them, there was as many as five, because there were several families that were living there at the time. But there presently are only two remaining, and they're there by virtue of a connection to the strongest man in the world.
What do you know about when they were built?
Well, I don't know that. One of the things that's kind of confusing about this story is that there's conflicting evidence. Some people say that they were built at the turn of the 20th century, but I think the more reliable evidence is that they were built in the 1970s, according to the recollections of a fellow who lived in that area, that he had been born in one of these Buddhas. And because he was worried about preserving the heritage of the area, he rebuilt them. He was a carpenter, and he therefore had the skill to build these things. But I continue to see little hints that suggest that no, he didn't build them. He simply restored them, which would indicate that they may be much older.
Okay, the strong man.
Okay, well, the fellow we're talking about is a fellow named Mike Swistoon. And Mike was born of Ukrainian immigrants. He was born here in Manitoba. In fact, he was born near the area where we're talking about. The nearest community, by the way, in case you're interested, is one called Olha. Olha today is a very small place there. I think there's a store, there's a community hall, and that's pretty much it. But Mike was born near Olha in a Buddha, and they were on a farm. That was how they made their livelihood. Mike was not what you consider, though, a really avid farmer. In fact, I think his interests were in a lot of other areas. So, for example, he was a keen sort of performer. He was apparently a bit of a character. People have described him as being a sort of an independent person, sort of a person who really didn't take direction from others very well. Well, in fact, in the later days, when he was getting a little older, they used to call him the crazy old man of Olha. So he was a bit of an eccentric character, I suppose. But he, in 1923, visited Winnipeg to attend a performance of the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus. And of course, if anybody's familiar with the circus, you know that there's all kinds of different acts, and one of them is the strongman. So he watched the strongman act, and I guess he was pretty unimpressed with the feats of strength that this guy had. So he went to see the people in charge of the circus and said, "I can do many of those things, but I can do them better." So he gave them a demonstration. I guess they were so impressed that they hired him on as their new strongman. So apparently then Mike went across Saskatchewan and Alberta performing in the various towns with the circus. And he did various feats of strength. It said, for example, that he would tie a rope around himself and then he would have two cars pulling in opposite directions and he could keep them from pulling him apart. They said that he would have a car with six people inside and he'd tie a rope around the bumper and then put it in his teeth and he'd pull the car along in his teeth along with these six people in it. It said that he would suspend himself over a pair of chairs with his feet on one chair and his head on another chair and then five big guys would stand on top of his stomach and he could hold them all up. So apparently very impressive. But his performance with the circus lasted 30 days because, unfortunately, he got a telegram from his father saying, the harvest needs to be collected and you need to be back. And so he apparently gave up a lucrative circus gig and he went back to Olha. And unfortunately, he never rejoined the circus. But what he did do is that 2 years later, this was in 1923-25, he went back to Winnipeg to witness another sort of spectacle. And that was a visit by Harry Houdini. Of course, Harry Houdini, the famous magician.
Of course.
And apparently, again, he was so impressed with the sorts of things that Houdini was able to do that he made contact with Houdini. He actually talked with Houdini and he sort of talked about the various things that Houdini did. And Houdini apparently was sufficiently impressed with him that he showed him a whole bunch of card tricks and illusions and acts of hypnotism. So apparently Mike went
back. This story just keeps getting better and better.
It's you can't make this stuff up. Mike would go back to the farm and would hypnotize the chickens. His mom apparently got very mad because he'd come out and find these hypnotized chickens laying all over the place. So Mike then took this on the road. He would go and visit communities around Olha, doing his acts of magic, doing his strongman act for years, apparently. He was also a musician. He played the violin. He played the cymbali, which is sort of a percussion instrument quite unique to Ukrainian culture. And so he was basically a one-man entertainment show that would travel around, I guess, much of Western Manitoba. Well, unfortunately, he had an accident. He was near Edmonton back. This was in the 30s now. He had an accident where he was demonstrating his feats of strength where he could take an iron bar, put it in his mouth, and then bend it by pulling down on each side. And he had six of these bars, and five of them he bent no problem. The sixth one, he apparently, the bar snapped, and he broke his jaw, and he was very badly maimed. He finished his show, apparently, then went to the hospital in Edmonton where he got medical attention. But in 1937, his father, on his deathbed, made his son pledge that he would return to the farm and would take over the farm as the eldest son. So, unfortunately, at that point, Mike's magician career kind of petered out. But he was still known through the years as this character who would perform and entertain and was a little bit, say, eccentric, too. So, Mike was an interesting character all around. As he reached the end of his life, though, I guess he wanted to leave some sort of legacy of his presence. And so in the late 1970s, there was a group that formed in this region called the Parkland Ukrainian Pioneers Association. And their objective was to preserve the heritage of this particular region, particularly to try to salvage some of these neglected historic sites and buildings. So I think this is where Mike's carpentry skills came in, because he had been working as a carpenter as well as doing farming. In fact, he's said that he built something like six churches in that region. He used his carpentry skill to build or to restore, depending on how you interpret it, some of these Buddhas. So there are two Buddhas that are still in remarkably good condition. I suspect maybe they've had some restoration since Mike. But what was most interesting, I think, is that if you're interested in Mike, there was a film made about him, a short film. It's not long. It's about 30 minutes. It was distributed by the National Film Board in 1980. And it's actually online. You can search for The Strongest Man in the World and watch this video of Mike, and you get a real sense of what kind of character he was. What's particularly tragic, though, is in the video, he recreates some of his strongman acts, including bending the steel bar in his mouth. Here's a guy who is 78 years old bending a steel bar in his mouth. He died a month after the film premiered. supposedly of cancer, but I have to wonder if he just wasn't a collective physical punishment that he had suffered through the years. So unfortunately, Mike didn't live to see his fame, but for a while there, at least, a lot of people knew about Mike Swistoon. What they didn't know, perhaps, was his role in preserving Ukrainian heritage in this region. So if you want to get a sense of it, two things. One is go check out the Buddhas, and two is watch this video, The Strongest Man in the World. But if you go to visit the Buddhas, one of the things you have to watch for, the sign is inconspicuous. In fact, I found it completely by accident. I was driving around and I saw this little sign, and oops, stop, back up, look, oh, Buddha, what's that? So I drove in off the road and I thought it would be right next to the road. I was driving and the road was twisting and turning and it was through a little bush and I thought, man, where am I going? Where's this going to end up? And I was half a mile in and I thought, oh no, this is going nowhere. I'm going to have to turn around. I'll just go a little further. Well, just a little further, and lo and behold, there was a little clearing in the woods and there were the Buddhas sitting there. So persevere. If you're going out to check them out, you have to drive quite a ways off the road to get to them. But when you get there, it's worth the trip.
How do you spell Buddha?
B-U-D-D-A. Okay. Although some people spell it with just a single D. I've also heard it pronounced Buddha,
okay.
But I've been assured by someone who speaks the language that Buddha is the correct pronunciation.
Well, you know, you've topped yourself here, Gordon. Amazing story. Stories today. Wow. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Terry.
And next week?
Well, next week, a lot of listeners will, of course, recall an organization called the Canadian Wheat Board, which was responsible for marketing farmers' grain in Canada. Well, next week, we're going to visit a site that has a different connotation on the phrase Canadian Wheat Board.
All righty. Look forward to it. Gordon, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Terry.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons ago.
Weekend Morning Show historian Gordon Goldsborough is here every Sunday with fascinating stories about lost and forgotten places in our province. You can explore some of the other places that Gordon has documented by searching for them on the Manitoba Historical Society website, mhs.mb.ca. He'll be back again next weekend at about 7:45 for Abandoned Manitoba here on the Weekend Morning Show. And watch for the release of Gordon's book called Abandoned Manitoba, based on this radio series. It's being launched on October 25th at McNally Robinson. And Gordon was telling me the other day that McNally Robinson has invited him to make presentations about Abandoned Manitoba stories in their community classroom beginning in January. So the empire of Abandoned Manitoba continues to grow thanks to Gordon's creativity, tenacity, and his willingness to drive down some very, very difficult roads in Manitoba.